Hi, and welcome to the Birth Visionary Podcast, where we talk tools, resources, and taking action with birth workers and maternal health advocates committed to social justice and systemic change. We help you get clear about your vision and values so you can lead with authenticity and intention in your unique work. So I am thrilled today to be with Dr. Haya Zidan, who I have known through the former No Trauma Mama Mastermind work. And I just can't wait for our conversation today, Haya. So let me introduce you so everyone knows all about you, all the wonderful things, and then we will get into it. So Dr. Haya Zidan is a mom and an advocate for maternal health and wellness in Saudi Arabia. With a background in psychology, public health, and primary care, she teaches and conducts research at university in the areas of health law, policy, and ethics, health behavior, maternal mental health, and e-health. She is a perinatal mental health counselor, certified postpartum support international, a certified motherhood studies practitioner, certified women's wellness and childbirth educator, and certified lactation counselor. She is a writer and lifelong learner and believes there is untapped potential for women to thrive in themselves and their motherhood experiences. Wow, Haya, you are just so incredible. And I cannot wait to dive into your background and the work you are up to now. So welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for inviting me to join you on the Birth Visionary Podcast. It's a great opportunity for us to connect and chat and, you know, explore, you know, all of the avenues that we have available to us. There's so much potential, I think, for us to be able to work in these areas, so much for us to be able to do, to be able to serve, you know, sort of moms and families and do the work that we really want to be able to do.
Yes.
So thanks for having
me. Oh, you're welcome. Yeah. As you say as we said in your bio, this untapped potential for women to thrive. And how can we unlock that for women? Those of us who have, I mean, you with all of your expertise is such a great example of someone who has the potential, the vision, the drive to unlock this, help women unlock this untapped potential to thrive in your part of the world and all over the world, right? So I can't wait to ask you about some of these certifications you've also
received.
Yeah. Sure. But first, I'd love to hear a bit about your story. So tell me how you have come into this work. What led you to become Dr. Haya and explore some of these different certifications and area of work that you clearly are so deeply into at this moment in time?
Okay, so well, first of all, I did my undergraduate studies in the U.S. in Boston, and I studied I got a psychology degree, and I did sort of a lot of different things, a lot of different courses, trying to explore sort of my interests and where I wanted to go, because there was just so many options available to me. And like I said, I've always been really interested in sort of learning and seeing what's out there. You know, sort of a voracious reader. So I really was very interested in sort of the psychology and sort of the brain and behavior and how all that, you know, shapes the way that we see the world and the way that we experience life. I went on after that and I did a public health degree, which really opened my eyes, you know, sort of to sort of what we're actually doing, you know, with ourselves, with our lives, and sort of even to the environment around us, and what that means even for our futures. And then I recognized the fact that there was a lot of potential for that where I come from. I come from Saudi Arabia. And when I was studying, that was still relatively new in terms of the way that we perceive and the way that we approach, you know, sort of our daily lives, even. Mostly the focus was on treatment and cure, and it wasn't about sort of the promotion and prevention and sort of being even more forward thinking. So it was relatively unheard of as a specialty. So I'm really, really glad that I got to be able to explore that and bring that forward. It's really proliferated a lot over the last, you know, 15, 20 years. But there is still so much more potential for us to be able to expand on that. And I, at that point, I got married, I started to have kids, and I started to recognize the fact that it wasn't just about me. It was about sort of what I wanted to do even for my children and what other children were able to experience in their own worlds around us and how much we have it as an influence, as sort of the caregivers and caretakers and what we're able to be able to offer for them. So I went on and I did a PhD in community health sciences in primary care. We looked at the digitization of health and how shifting towards more electronic means of communication and sort of the way that we're moving, I think, globally, okay, the way that technology has infiltrated our lives has enormous potential for us to be able to improve on our health and impact our decisions and behaviors that we engage in on instantly. You know, everything is at our fingertips. And as a mother, I think it has changed the way that we experience motherhood as well. The technology and its impact on our lives, every single one of us has changed, even the way that we experience motherhood. And you know, things are becoming more and more complex. Okay, the challenges are increasing, and we are, you know, expected to rise to that and expected to handle it. But it is affecting us. And, you know, the rates of, you know, sort of maternal depression, maternal anxiety, and other psychological issues that they're having are increasing. And globally, the statistics on mental health issues are growing. It's expected to be sort of the next pandemic. So all of these things seem to really come together for me. And I recognize the fact that I wanted to do more in that area. So I'm very interested in looking at sort of policy, mental health policy internationally, and how that works where I come from, and what it is that I can do to be able to enhance that, to raise awareness about mental health issues and sort of build capacity for services to support and provide, you know, what people need.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Thanks for sharing that. You know, many things stand out for me, but two things in particular. So the moment of, you know, that moment of motherhood as being pivotal in our path, right? So you had mentioned up to a point you had done all of this research, degrees focused on the individual. And as you put it, suddenly it wasn't just about me, it was about my kids, about the larger community. And so I feel like that point of motherhood, we all know, is such a transformative moment in our careers, our lives. And I think something that the listeners of this podcast probably have in common, if they are parents, with you, with myself, with others I've talked to, is the trajectory our careers, our work has taken post giving birth, mm-hmm. is sort of the culmination and the realization of what we ultimately want to do in the world, right? It's just such a pivotal moment. We all know that. And I just love hearing through people's stories how the trajectory of their work and service are shaped by that experience. So that's the first thing. And then, of course, you know, you mentioned mental health, the next pandemic that we're all expecting. I work in healthcare, and we've been planning for really the unknown. We know that we're going to see issues on a scope unlike never before. And so I know that, you know, through my work in a health system, we've already been exploring, you know, what is this going to look like? What can we start to preventatively put into place at this point in time to serve the people that will be coming to us and needing help, and that will be many, many, many people. I have a question for you. So with regard to the technology issue, and you mentioned, you know, this experience of technology in motherhood, you know, it shapes, if I'm hearing you correctly, technology is such a pivotal part of our lives and is impacting motherhood as it never has before. Do you think technology is helping mothers or hindering mothers' mental health from your perspective?
Okay, so one of the things that I'm very interested in, which is a relatively new concept, is digital well-being, which means that we have all of these technological means at our fingertips, but it's about us being very conscious about how we consume and how we use this and not let it affect us negatively, take the good and leave the bad. But it's about us having to sort of build that consciousness and awareness. So I know a lot of people, you know, they're worrying about screen time and how that's affecting them and how that's affecting their relationships with their children, with each other. But it really is about sort of recognizing the fact that we have this available. We don't need it. Let it take over our lives, and how we can use that to our benefit, because there are always advantages and disadvantages to anything that we have, because it really can take over. So we're hearing a lot of things about digital detox, and this is something that we really need to be more aware of. So digital well-being is a major component. Okay, so in terms of mental health, there's potential for you to use the technology to build, mobile health tools, applications that can support your mental health, for you to be able to connect with a care provider, using telemedicine, for you to be able to get a consultation or follow up or receive a prescription. There's so much potential for that to be able to help you overcome some of these mental health issues. But again, if it's something that takes over your life and you're not able to let go, or it causes anxiety because you're always symptom checking, so in that way, it can be something that can be harmful. So we really need to be aware of.
Yeah, absolutely. I can relate to that. I had a bit of a health scare a couple of months ago, and I went down the WebMD Google path and I was convinced I was dying. And so in that sense, you know, it can be very empowering. We have this knowledge at our fingertips, as you said. And I'm thinking in the care of children as well, with my first child, I can't tell you how many times I was looking up this rash, this thing, and convinced that it was the end of the world. So it has the potential to be incredibly empowering, but also harmful to our mental health. So I think that resonates, I'm sure, with so many people. What's your own relationship to technology like? I know a lot of people that will take intentional Instagram breaks or will go offline every weekend. I'd love to know how that's evolving.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been something that it's a work in progress. Okay. So there are times when I feel like maybe I'm overusing or that I'm spending too much time. I do use like a screen time, like a tracker, and I keep an eye on that. If my percentages go up, I'll be really conscious about saying, okay, I really need to scale this down. But what it is exactly that I'm doing? Is it something to do with my job? Is it something to do with sort of the kids' online schooling? Is it me using social media? Is it me reading online? Because I do reading online as well. So recognizing where it is that I'm spending my time and figuring out what is the value that is providing me. And if I need to be able to scale it down, then I will scale it down. But I think a lot of it's about self-discipline as well. So having the maturity and the consciousness to decide for yourself, saying, this is good for me and this isn't, maybe I need to step it down a little bit.
Yeah. I love this.
And modeling that to my kids as well.
Yep. Absolutely. On my stronger days, I remember that my actions, I am modeling everything to my kid. Sometimes I'll purposely just pick up, I have books stacked just all over my house because I'm also a reader, and many of them are, you know, halfway read and parts are red and things are sticking out of them. And I always think I need to clean these up, and I'm like, no, I'm actually modeling for my kids that books are important right in my life. And with social media, I'm evolving around what I'm modeling. But I love this idea of tracking, right? This idea of tracking. So you are aware, because when you're scrolling, when you're moving through information, whether you're consuming for work or just relaxing or whatever it might be, we're not always conscious of that time. And so I do love that as a practical tool for people listening to try. And there's so many different ways to track, right? Different software, different apps that you can download, et cetera. So interesting. I could talk for days about the technology issues and big data, especially in healthcare, and how this is unfolding in the context of pandemic as well. I'm wondering, I'll shift gears for a second. I'm wondering, for your particular community and the work you're doing right now, tell me what you're focused on. So is there one particular thing in the community sense? And the community can mean your university. Community can mean your actual neighborhood. Tell me how all this good work that we've been talking about, in one way it might be, you might be focusing in your community on any aspect of this.
Okay, so yeah, definitely. There's at the university where I work, I'm part of a mental health promotion committee where we do lots of different student activities to raise awareness about mental health issues and how that affects their daily lives and their ability to achieve their, you know, sort of objectives or their goals as students and really get the best out of their lives at university. Okay, because a lot of students are, you know, facing these issues where they might be at risk of, you know, sort of not wanting to finish or dropping out or and that will that causes them a lot of distress, I think. So having this as a resource, so we created sort of a an outreach program, community sessions, you know, where we're sitting and we're discussing support groups, and a lot of it, because of the fact that we're remote learning now, is available online. So this has incredible reach. It's something that's national because we have a lot of different campuses for the university where I work. So that's one aspect of it. The other aspect is the fact that I'm working on a policy overview, like a scoping review of current policy for maternal mental health, specifically postpartum depression or perinatal mental health issues overall, seeing what's out there and, you know, what scope is there for us to be able to improve on services. I know for a fact that we don't have mandatory screening in place anywhere on the health services continuum, and I'd really like to see that happen. And also the fact that, you know, sort of in the community, what sort of support is available for mothers? I know that we have a lot of social constructs about motherhood and the expectations around motherhood and how we are approaching it and what we think mothers should exemplify as sort of the ideal, where we put them on a pedestal, but, you know, they're all up there alone. And each one of them is trying her best, but it's really, it's a struggle, for us to be able to achieve that perfection, that we're expected to have. So it's, you know, sort of different things that I'm sort of working on. I'd love to be able to have time to write a book, about that. Yeah.
That would be incredible. I know we've talked about that before, and I mean, I think that would just be so incredible, because as you're talking, I'm thinking to myself, I want to read your book, Haya, but I also know what it's like trying to. Now, you have how many little ones again? Do you have four?
I have four. Personally, my oldest is around 17 and my youngest is 3.
Wow. So I can relate firsthand to finding that time for writing. I mean, it's so easy to, and when we're, you know, this idea of the construct of mother as, you know, being on the pedestal, needing to be perfect, that's culturally reinforced in different ways, depending on your context, right? Your cultural context. But I think we all, you know, all mothers can probably relate to at least some of the pressure to live up to a certain ideal, whether that's imposed by family, you know, whatever your particular context is. And, you know, I've struggled that with in different ways. And I feel like a lot of it with me has been self-imposed as well. For me, you know, I grew up in a family where every night we had a home-cooked, beautiful meal on the table. And there were points in my childhood where my mom worked and there were points where she didn't. And I still remember that meal, you know, always manifesting every night. So for me, you know, living up to that ideal that, you know, I've constructed for myself and, you know, based on what brought me comfort as a child, is wanting to have like this beautiful meal for my family every night. Does that happen every day? No, it's unable to happen every day because, you know, you mentioned writing. If I want to sit down and write for a couple of hours, sometimes that's at the sacrifice of some of that quote, good mom stuff that I feel like I should be doing. So that really, you know, you bringing that up really hits home for me in different ways.
Yeah, that's perfectly reasonable to expect that, you know, you cannot tick all of the boxes every single day. And one of the most important things that I'm really passionate about is the fact that because we are striving to do things for others, to create that perfect meal, to be able to serve others, to be able to help, to be able to move things forward, then it might actually start to impact on our own health. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we need to be able to take care of ourselves as well. Okay. And that's also something that we model for others, saying that, you know, okay, I know what my triggers are. I know that I'm starting to flag. I know that I need to take some time off the internet or off Instagram or off of social media or off work, Okay, I need to be able to say no. I need to be able to do something to take care of myself because I'm feeling like I'm not strong as I would like myself to be. That is something really, really important that we need to be able to, you know, help moms to be able to recognize, because we have that perfectionism, that ideal that we have in our minds, and we often let ourselves go, and then we're feeling like we're resentful, or we're you know, we pity ourselves, or we're feeling really upset or resentful and frustrated, or angry even that, you know, this is not what I want to be doing. I get that feeling sometimes, saying that if I had the option to be doing something else, I would probably not be doing laundry at this moment.
Yes, I can relate 100%. And I'm laughing because I'm talking to you, as I mentioned, from my husband's closet, because my kids are in the house. And sometimes that is the only place, you know, as we were chatting before I hit record, now, especially, we're finding the places we can work. And then outside this door is a pile of clean laundry that's been sitting on the floor for a couple of days, because yes, I've had more exciting things that fill me up to do other than tackle. And there's only so much energy in the day, right? So it's sort of like talk to Dr. Haya on the podcast and have this amazing conversation, or spend, you know, the 45 minutes doing the laundry. But that laundry is like a symbol of the thing for me, like the thing that I should take care of, because I'm to be a good mom, right? To be a good caretaker, to be a good, you know, temple keeper of my home, however you want to say it. Mm-hmm. So it's that constant visual reminder. And there are many, right? Those visual reminders of what society, what culture, what my own family construct may be signaling I should be doing versus what I know will actually make me a better mother, filling myself up with the work, the visionary work that makes, you know, makes me who I am. And that stuff still needs to get done. But my point is, it's not always the thing that's going to come first, right? Because it's not the thing I'd rather be doing.
And it's not something that I want to be stressing myself out about. Yes, you know, their house is fine, laundry will get done eventually, but I need to be able to do stuff that fills me up, as you said, because then I'd be, you know, sort of that in the best frame of mind possible for me to continue to be able to give to them. Mm-hmm. Okay. But it's not necessarily them first. It's me too. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm still here. I still exist. And I think that's one of the really important things that I want to be able to work on more, is that awareness of, you know, sort of women and you know, sort of the partners when they're going into this sort of parenthood or just building a family and approaching this with that sense of, we know what we are getting into, because I think a lot of people adventure into this without any kind of recognition of what it's going to do to their lives. And then, you know, sort of after the effect, and then they recognize and they're like, what did we do? And there's a lot of a frustration, a lot of anger, a lot of domestic issues that they might be having, a lot of divorce, I think, based on the fact that we had no idea what this would do to us. This wasn't what we were expecting. And things sort of start to fall apart. But I think if we raise that sense of awareness on how to approach it, how to take care of ourselves, how to take care of each other, how to support each other, I think it will do a lot. And that's why I went into sort of childbirth education and sort of that wellness education, is because I wanted to bring all of this together to be able to sort of, I think, raise our capacity to be able to approach this point of in our lives, especially the early years. I think sort of the first couple of years with young children are really challenging, I think.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And, you know, you touch on childbirth education. I'm thinking about all the way, you know, there's a spectrum of, you know, I'm in Southern California in the United States, and there's no shortage of childbirth educators and options for parents to pursue. And there's a range of styles of childbirth education, but I'm thinking of all the possibilities for childbirth education to evolve, to include information around discussion of these changes that you can expect as, you know, if it's, you know, a couple moving forward as a couple, as a married couple, if that's the context, mm-hmm. you know, we're aware of that there are, you know, we loosely hear about the identity shifts that take place, but the environment in the home, the energy, the shift in responsibility, many people will say you don't know until you're actually there and living it. And I think that's true to an extent, but I do also agree with you that there are things that we can do to prepare people mm-hmm. for many of the things that you were just referring to on from, and I know people doing good work in this area, but I think there is room for how we conceptualize childbirth education to really evolve past the point from what I know of it, you know, here in my own community.
I think much of childbirth education is focused on the physical aspects, sort of what happens to you during pregnancy and sort of labor and sort of delivery. I don't like to use the word delivery, but birth itself. And then the stories typically stop after that. Here, there's your baby, all's well, go home. And then, you know, what happens after that is a little bit of a, I think, you know, sort of still a black hole. I think we still need to do a lot more to be able to raise awareness of the fact that, you know, those first couple of months up to first year and so is really a major shift. And it doesn't really matter if it's a first or a second or a third, it's still a big shift for everyone in that family. Introducing a new member to your family is going to be, you know, sort of really, it's going to shake things up.
Okay? Oh, yeah.
And yeah, so I mean, and if you add in the potential for, you know, sort of a mood or anxiety disorder, or this has, you know, the potential to be really combustible, and it's really damaging, because then you bring in that whole aspect of, well, the baby's fine, so you should be fine too. Aren't you happy? You know, there are other women who don't have, or other families who don't have, or who would love to be in your situation. And then there's that sense of guilt or feeling ashamed, or, you know, because it's supposed to be idyllic. Okay. And we always bring these pictures of sort of smiling and happy and everything. And then you're dealing with the baby who has colic, or who has health issues, or you're having health issues. And then you're feeling like, oh, well, maybe I shouldn't be having these issues. Maybe I shouldn't be complaining. And a lot of people are thinking that it's, you know, just, you know, you whining about something that you shouldn't be whining about, or saying that, you know, there are other people who have it worse than you do, so you shouldn't be complaining. And then it starts to snowball. And that's the thing. I would like for us to be able to have that sense of awareness and to take care of ourselves enough that we don't end up having to be readmitted to hospital, or to need to resort to medication, or it doesn't necessarily have to go. And that's where it comes back to that public health aspect. Yeah. If we can, you know, do the promotion and the prevention in a way that we can circumvent having to resort to, you know, having to resort to medical professionals and sort of inpatient stays, and then you're having to deal with mother and baby units and all sorts of mm-hmm. complicated issues.
Yes, definitely. And I'm thinking, so the people likely listening right now to this podcast are birth workers. They are maternal health advocates from you know, all over the world, different parts of the world. And I know that we are shaped by our locations, the communities we are in. Is there one thing that you can think of based on your work, your research? Is there one small step, practical thing that the people listening right now could start to implement to help realize this vision that you have for the future of maternal wellness work? And it can be one small thing. So for mothers listening, for the birth worker listening, what's, you know, maybe one thing that comes to mind for you?
Yes, for the birth workers listening, I would like to be able to emphasize the fact that these people, these mothers, these families who you're working with, are not just bodies, you know, giving birth. They're actual human beings with lives and feelings and opinions and desires. So we need to think about that and be with them during that experience, and not having just a job to do, just something that needs to be done just to be able to ensure that, you know, they are, you know, this happened and baby was delivered and baby is fine. It's so much deeper and so much richer than that. And it can be an empowering experience. It can be life changing for these people. And it can also be really damaging for them and can affect them long term. It's not just about what happened during their time in hospital. It's about how that shapes their future. So we have such a significant role to play, and we can really be in that frame of mind, really supportive to them, to be able to achieve that sense of satisfaction from that life experience. Or it can be something that can affect them, even if we're not dealing with them anymore, even if they've left the hospital or left our care, it can still be something that affects them years after, and it can affect their relationship with their children. So that's one thing. And then for the mothers or sort of families who are listening, partners, I think it's really about, you know, us taking care of ourselves and learning as much as we can about these experiences and what to expect, and being very reasonable about our expectations. It's not perfect. It's going to be, I think, very messy. And there's going to be ups and downs. There's good days and bad days. But we really need to recognize the fact that we all need to work together, and we need to build our own resilience in ourselves as well to be able to get as much, you know, richness out of it.
That's beautiful. I mean, I love this idea, this advice, this thought toward, you know, remembering that the birthing person is more than just the physical, right? More than just the technical, but is an embodied, complex, layered human being that mm-hmm. is having this defining experience that can either set them up for success and joy and the strength to face the inevitable hardship, or it can set them up to, you know, for trauma, quite frankly. And passing those traumatic traits and experiences on to future generations. Doing a lot of research right now about transgenerational trauma and the effects. And there are so many good people doing this work right now. And it's really informing my own ethics work at the moment and what I'm writing currently. So
it's really, really valuable. I mean, I think it's not just about that moment when that patient is with me. How is what I am doing going to be potentially affecting them even after they leave my care? I teach health law and ethics as well, teach young medical professionals about the fact that it's one of the basic principles of ethics is you are providing care. This is health care. If that individual or that human being that you're interacting with doesn't feel cared for, okay, then you're not really doing what you think you're doing.
Yes.
I think this is really important for us to always try and remember, how is it perceived by them? Yeah. Trauma doesn't necessarily have to be physical trauma or birth injury. It could be, you know, sort of emotional or mental, okay? And it's something that just because you've ticked the box that patient is still alive, okay, after they left my care, or the baby is still alive, doesn't necessarily mean that it was a success.
Amen to that. Absolutely. I always, when I'm speaking with my own students or practitioners I'm working with, the first thing I ask them is, how can you, in this interaction, maximize the dignity of the patient? So first start with that piece. How can we maximize the dignity of the patient? And go from there, because that is number one. The care will happen. You are a technician. You know how to keep this person alive or to help them thrive physically. But let's start with that question, because that will shape, and that is exactly what you were saying, that will shape their experience of this and what they take from this experience. So health is, yes, about having that physical wellness, life being preserved, but health is about the full spectrum, the holistic person. And, you know, for me, I've found that asking that question, even with my own interactions, because there are days you just want to get through your work. And if I have patient consults, we just want to make sure that this is dealt with, the person is leaving, that they, you know, they are alive or their wishes are heard. But I have to remind myself quite often, you know, remember, this is about maximizing the dignity of the patient in this interaction. Because then they go away more whole, more healed, and more able to serve and be with and walk with the people in their family, in their environment, in a way that, again, coming back to that modeling you mentioned earlier, you know, modeling what health really is for new mothers, for people in the birth experience. And I'm thinking about the power of language and all of this too, how we speak to someone, they'll remember forever. I remember the things spoken to me in my birth experience, all three of my birth experiences, the good and the bad, and it will literally stay with me forever. Yeah, so much opportunity for growth, improvement. And I'm so grateful that you are focused, your work is focused the way it is on mental health aspects of these motherhood experiences, because as you said, as we all know, this second pandemic, mental health related pandemic is upon us, and there's no avoiding that. There's no avoiding what's coming. So I'm just so grateful for your work in the world and the vision that you have for the future of maternal wellness and the role that you are playing. So I will ask you one final question. Mm-hmm. How can people connect with your work? How can people support your work? Tell us where we can find you and how we can support you.
Well, I'm mainly on Instagram. My Instagram is at maternalwellnesskSA, because I'm in Saudi Arabia, it's the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. And you know, it's perfectly, I'd love it for people to DM me or follow me or ask me any questions. I'd love to be able to connect in that way. So I think mainly through Instagram, really.
Wonderful. Perfect. And I will link to that in the show notes so people know exactly where to find you. And as I said, I cannot wait to buy your book. If you need a writing buddy ever, Haya.
Oh, I would love it. I would love it. That sounds great.
An accountability buddy. I will get up. What is our time difference? I think we might be more than 10 hours apart. Possibly.
Oh, it's around 5:30 p.m. here. Yeah.
Okay, and we're 7:30 a.m. here. So 10 hours apart. That's right. So I will get up in the wee hours. We're going to have to work this out because you have a book.
We're going to set up a schedule, I think.
We will.
I really feel like it's in me, and I think there's a potential for me to do something really awesome, but I just need to dedicate myself to it. But I can see it. I can see it happening.
Yeah, no, for sure. I know it will happen. I know it will happen. So thank you so much for being with us. I'm so grateful, and I can't wait till the next time we connect.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure to be able to talk to you today.